This episode of The Y-Files is brought to you by PDS Debt. In 2012, Terry Lovelace sat in his doctor's office waiting for x-ray results. Earlier that day, he felt a sharp pain in his leg, lost his balance, and fell. The doctor returned, looking confused. He showed Terry the x-ray. A small square object about the size of a fingernail was buried deep in Terry's right leg. The doctor had never seen anything like it. He asked if Terry had been in an accident or had surgery. He hadn't. But then he remembered. For 40 years, Terry had tried to forget the terrifying experience at Devil's Den State Park. He never told anyone, knowing they wouldn't believe him without evidence. But the evidence had been there all along. A strange metal object embedded in his leg. And the object was not man-made. What is it now?
Beaver Box is getting bigger.
What in the world are you talking about?
Oh, remember Beaver Box? The business I started with the Beaver Brothers?
Oh, right. That's the business where...
They carve these little wooden hearts and make them into pins you could wear. Where everyone can have a big heart on, yes.
Heart on.
What'd I say? Anyway, no time for chit-chat. We're adding a new service to Beaver Box. It's called Got Wood.
What is... Why would you... What?
It's called Got Wood. You give us your wood, and the Beaver Brothers will carve it into anything you like. New wood, old wood, small wood, even if you got really big wood.
Yeah, I don't think you hear yourself right now.
Nothing gets the beavers more excited than a nice, thick log. Woodworking, more like wood-loving. These eager beavers will munch that log to perfection. Then they'll oil it up and polish your wood.
Please, please stop describing this business and just call PDS Debt.
Oh, did you just woodwork your way into the next sponsor?
Why, yes. I did. If you're making payments every month on your debt and the balances aren't going down, PDS has solutions for you. PDS Debt has customized options for anyone struggling with a lot of monthly debt payments. Credit cards, personal loans, collections, even medical bills. They provide a service to match you with debt solutions tailored to your financial situation. Everyone with $10,000 or more in eligible debt qualifies. There's no minimum credit score required. Bad and fair credit is accepted. You can save more while paying off your debt in a fraction of the time. And PDS Debt is offering our qualified viewers a free debt analysis. It only takes 30 seconds to complete their online assessment. Head over to PDSDEBT.com/files.
PDSDEBT.com/files.
That's right. What was that?
The doorbell.
I know it was the doorbell. It sounds like there's people in my house. What's going on?
Oh, to get the business started, we put up flyers around the neighborhood. We said we'd polish anyone's wood for only $5. The line is all the way around the block. Talk about a grand opening. It looks like only men know. I thought our demo would include a few more women. Huh. I think I need to do some market research, baby.
No, I think I can pretty much explain what's going on.
And none of these guys are carrying anything. I guess they all have small wood. It doesn't matter. We'll make sure they're all completely satisfied.
Do not do this in my house.
Oh, don't worry about it. We put down plastic, and we'll clean up after everybody's finished off.
Please don't.
Hey, on your way home, can you pick up a little more oil? It looks like these beavers are gonna be going all night.
In June 1977, Terry and Toby were Air Force medics stationed at Whiteman Air Force Base near Kansas City, Missouri. They took 4 days of leave to go camping. After a six-hour drive to Devil's Den State Park, they chose a secluded place in a restricted area to camp, drink beer, and look at the stars. Around 9 p.m., as they ate and joked near the fire, Toby suddenly hushed Terry and said, "You hear that?" Terry said, "I don't hear anything." Toby said, "Exactly." Suddenly, everything was silent. No crickets, no birds, no breeze. It felt like time had stopped, and the forest was holding its breath. Toby noticed three faint lights in the sky. They were dim, but getting brighter. They flew in formation. Then they rotated around an axis and started accelerating.
It was moving even faster and blocking out entire fields of stars. It was impossible to estimate its speed. We had no point of reference. With a feigned laugh, I said, "I think that damn thing is headed toward us. I think it's going to sail right over the top of us."
The lights belonged to a triangle-shaped craft now hovering above them, and for some reason, they weren't frightened.
So the lights are, I don't know, a few hundred yards away, and then suddenly, boom, it's over our camp and just hovers there. We were looking right up at the thing. It's as big as a city block. We could hear it humming. Now, you'd think we'd start to panic, but I distinctly recall that while it floated over our campsite, I felt this feeling of calm wash over me. It was a feeling that I'd say was very close to sedation. I don't know how else to describe it. I felt absolutely at ease, just peaceful, calm.
That calm sensation remained even as the spacecraft slowly descended. A beam of white light burst out of the ship. For about 30 seconds, the campsite lit up brighter than the day, and then darkness. Next, a thin blue laser appeared, scanning the camp. It swept over the tent, the fire, the men, everything. This went on for a few minutes, then darkness again. Toby said, "Show's over," and the two men went back to the tent to sleep.
Hang on.
What?
There's a giant spaceship floating above their camp, and they say show's over and go to sleep. Like, this is all fine?
Well, they were still being sedated by this spaceship somehow.
Oh, or maybe it sprayed blorpus on them. That stuff makes you chill. So chill.
It wasn't a chemical. The craft used technology to keep them calm psychologically. So once the lights stopped, they got tired and went to sleep.
Yeah, I hope they slept on their backs.
Right.
Because then their backs would be on the ground.
I understand.
So it's harder to slip in the anal probe.
I get it. Despite a giant spaceship humming just a few yards above their tent, Terry and Toby fell asleep immediately. But they weren't asleep for long. Terry woke up, but he wasn't in the tent. He was lying naked on a cold rubber floor, his clothes bundled on his chest. He heard and felt a low pulsing hum. The air smelt like chemicals that burned his throat. Then panic hit him. He couldn't move. His body was paralyzed. His mind was racing, trapped inside a body that would not respond. He could only watch. Somewhere nearby, a woman screamed in terror, and Terry hoped that he wasn't next. As his eyes adjusted, he saw the room was enormous, the size of a stadium. The craft above their campsite was big, but it wasn't big enough for a room this size.
Yeah, unless it was a TARDIS.
Right.
Because they're bigger on the inside.
Yes, I know.
Oh, I miss Doctor Who.
Doctor Who is still on the air.
But is it, though?
On Terry's right, at least 10 others lay paralyzed, awake, and terrified. Men, women, even children. Some darted their eyes in panic, while others stared blankly at the ceiling, resigned to their fate, occasionally blinking away silent tears. On the left side of the room, a line of disc-shaped craft stood ready for deployment. The room had to be 5 stories high. Vehicles about the size of golf carts floated around the space, carrying children to different areas. Then he saw them. They weren't children. They were small, gray-skinned beings with large black eyes. They wore matching gray flight suits. They had long arms and slender fingers and moved quickly and robotically. Then something in a beige uniform walked by. No, it was a someone. There were other humans here, not captives. They wore beige uniforms with orange rank insignias. They were clearly part of the crew. They ignored the naked abductees and went about their business. A being with pink, chalky skin caught Terry's attention. It resembled the grays, but stood about 6 feet tall. As it passed, it locked eyes with Terry. The creature was inside his mind, downloading his thoughts, memories, and secrets. Terry felt completely exposed and violated. Before he can process any of this, he was moving. Several gray beings lifted Terry and carried him down a hallway. To his right, he saw glass tanks of varying sizes. Most were empty, but some contained strange creatures, a mix of familiar and alien.
On my left is just a white wall, but on my right there's a series of glass tanks like aquariums. They vary in size from a foot square all the way up to big enough for a human being. They're all empty except for one. One had this like pink water in it, and there was what I thought was a puppy. It looked like a newborn puppy, eyes closed, that sort of thing. As I'm going past it, it opened its eyes and I started to freak out.
Then Terry got even more frightened because they were coming to the end of the hall.
They took me down the hallway and into a dome-shaped white room. Everything was either white, gray, or stainless steel. It was like a medical examination room. The little gray guys took my clothing and slid me onto this table. And I thought, oh, that's nice. It's warm. They warmed it up for me.
But the warmth wasn't for him. The table was warm from the bodies that had been here before him. Two new aliens entered, 9-foot-tall beings that looked like praying mantises. The grays turned Terry on his side, and the mantis beings began operating on his lower back.
Yeah, lower back. That's a nice way of putting it.
No, they really were operating on his lower back.
Huh. Usually they aim a little, lower.
The pain was unbearable, and Terry screamed, but no sound came out. His silent screams seemed to annoy one of the mantis aliens. It stopped and spoke to Terry telepathically.
He stands up and he tilts his head to one side and looks at me with this big eye. And I could hear him crystal clear in my head. And it said to me, why are you screaming? Stop screaming. You know we don't hurt you. You know we take you back down.
And they did. With a green claw, the alien tapped Terry on the forehead and everything went black. Moments later, he and Toby were lying in the grass near the car. Terry wasn't frightened at first. He was annoyed. The least they could have done was put them back in the tent. And then they did. About 6 grays dragged them across the grass and just threw them into the tent. Everything was still silent. Unnaturally silent. Terry wanted to speak, but he felt too exhausted and too terrified. His vision blurred, and then he passed out. Blinding flashes of light jolted Terry awake. They were piercing the tent and hurt his eyes. He realized his whole body ached. Toby peeked through the tent flap, mumbling something. The green strobe-like flashes continued. Terry's watch had stopped at midnight, but the tent clock read 3 a.m. He reached for the flashlight, but Toby grabbed it, whispering for him to stay quiet. That's when Terry noticed Toby had been crying. Then they heard footsteps and rustling around their camp. They froze, waiting for silence before daring to look outside. They saw an enormous craft hovering over the meadow. It was as big as an office building on its side. Small windows showed figures moving around inside. Below the craft, Terry saw a dozen children wandering around.
Now, my sweet summer child, those are not children.
They weren't. Toby whispered, not kids, not human. They took us. Hurt us, and then he started crying again. Terry was confused. Then the images hit him. A bright room, small creatures, a giant insect, medical instruments, and pain. So much pain. He pushed the images away. A white column of light emerged from the craft. The figures walked into it and vanished. The ship rose high above the meadow, rotated, and blasted over the horizon. It never made a sound. Toby sighed. He had been holding his breath the whole time. His face was swollen and sunburned. Then Terry realized he was burned too, and both of them were covered in welts like bug bites. They scrambled to their car and abandoned the camp. Devil's Den vanished in their rearview mirror as they sped away. They drove straight back to the base. Terry dropped Toby off at his house, watching him stumble inside, still in a daze. Terry's wife saw him and immediately took him to the medical clinic. Terry told the medical staff everything, except what happened between 9 p.m. and 3 a.m. He knew that if he told them what happened, they'd put him in the psych ward. His sunburn was actually caused by radiation, confirmed by a Geiger counter. His clothes were taken away in a biohazard bag. The next 48 hours were a blur. Then on the third night, a knock at his door.
Here comes the man in black.
The nurse opened the door and two men walked in flashing badges.
Yep.
They wore dark suits and even darker expressions. They told the nurse they were with OSI, the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, and they needed to talk to Terry alone. Terry sat up in his hospital bed, staring at the tape recorder in front of him. His head was spinning. At just 22 years old, he had just endured the most traumatic experience of his life. And now two OSI agents were standing in his room. One of them, a major, was barking orders at him. They wanted to know what Terry saw that night. He told them about the lights in the sky, but stopped there. Still, he felt like they already knew the rest, which disturbed him. Could the Air Force be involved? A sudden image flashed in his mind. Humans in military uniforms working alongside aliens aboard the spacecraft. They knew. The government knew. The major's voice snapped him out of his thoughts. Do you understand, Sergeant? Terry nodded slowly. The major was reading from a card, reciting Article 31 of the UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the military's version of, you have the right to remain silent. Terry could only respond with, yes, sir.
The only correct response to anything that starts with, you have the right to remain silent, is lawyer.
Terry was bullied into signing a waiver, giving OSI the right to search his home and car. Not that the waiver mattered, the searches were already underway. One agent, furious, got right up in Terry's face, accusing him of holding back. He insisted they knew Terry and his friend Toby had seen more than just lights at Devil's Den. He demanded Terry admit it. But he wouldn't. There was no way he was going to talk about the abduction. Before he was worried about being thrown in the psych ward, now he was worried about being thrown in jail. He stuck to his story about the lights and prayed that Toby did the same. Frustrated, the agents grabbed their tape recorder, tossed a business card on the bed, and forced Terry to sign more documents without letting him read them. They ordered him never to speak of the incident or the lights, and if he remembered anything else, he was to call them immediately. The last thing they told Terry was that he could not contact Toby again for any reason, not ever. Shortly after, Toby was transferred to a base in Japan, and they never spoke again. The trauma of the abduction and the interrogation left Terry determined to keep quiet. He told no one, not his friends, not his family, not even his wife. Instead, he tried to forget the incident at Devil's Den had ever happened. In time, the memories faded, though the PTSD lingered. Despite everything, Terry built a successful career as a lawyer and assistant attorney general. He got married, had a family, and led what appeared to be a perfectly normal life. But in 2012, when Terry saw an x-ray of his leg, his life changed again. He decided to have the implants removed and go public with his story, but he was warned that doing this would be very dangerous.
The government threatened him?
Nope. The threat came from someone much more dangerous. Terry Lovelace's vocal stance about his 2012 implant discovery, backed by x-rays, gave his story credibility. It also attracted unwanted attention. In 2017, he fell asleep and then was suddenly sitting in his living room. Across from him sat a woman about 4 feet tall with light brown hair. At first glance, she appeared to be a small Asian woman, but something was off. The hair was a wig. She wasn't human. Then Terry remembered something. A few years ago, his wife had woken up to see a small figure with large eyes at the foot of their bed. A voice in her mind had calmly told her, "Do not be afraid, go to sleep." At the time, she thought it was a dream. It wasn't. Now that same figure was in Terry's living room. He recognized her. She wasn't quite alien and wasn't quite human. And his first thought was, he didn't like the wig. Her lips didn't move, but he heard her voice in his mind.
So you don't like my hair? It's the same as the last time we met. I always wear it this way. You know that.
Suddenly, memories flooded back. This wasn't the first time Terry had seen her. He'd been abducted many times since he was 8 years old. Terry remembered being with other children aboard a ship in a setting that resembled a daycare room. The children were given tasks like arranging colored blocks and tiles, but Terry couldn't remember why. Other times they were given small objects like cubes or balls and asked to move them with their minds, testing their psychic skills. During all these tests and games, this woman was there watching over the children.
Oh, like an old pair.
Old pair?
Yeah, it's a French word for someone who helps with the kids, like a nanny. The alien lady was an old pair.
Au pair.
What'd I say?
The children were not always treated gently. They also endured painful medical procedures. And like Terry's experience at Devil's Den, the children were paralyzed and watched small gray beings carry out various tasks around the ship. Every time Terry was abducted, this woman was there. It seemed like her job was to keep children calm during the examinations. Strangely, Terry felt affection for her.
Yes, Terry, I'm that woman. No, you will not be taken tonight. No more examinations ever, I promise.
She helped him sort through his memories. He was on a spacecraft on the far side of the moon. He saw a vast, sprawling city where humans lived. They were mining something.
Yes, there are many human beings living and working on your moon. They've been there for generations and have never been to Earth. They're there to collect and process the rocks. It's very important work.
But the woman wasn't here to reminisce. She'd come here to warn him. Terry's public disclosures, along with his upcoming book, had alarmed her hosts, as she called them. They worked with the U.S. government, and they were concerned. Terry wanted to reveal the truth, and the woman heard this in his mind.
You have seen things that are important to both your government and to my hosts. You are not aware of their importance, so you cannot determine which memories must be kept secret. Your government will not allow you to speak of what you have seen.
The woman said there would be consequences if he didn't stop talking. Terry asked about the implants, but she dismissed the question. She wasn't here to educate him. She was here to warn him.
The devices have many purposes. The concern among all is that once disclosed, they will support your claims. Your government will not allow it. I cannot remove your memories without causing you great harm. I will not do that. But the devices in your leg, those are going to be removed.
Terry said the world deserved to know.
Your government will not allow it. They will first attempt to discredit you. Then they will threaten you. And after that, if you continue speaking, your government will kill you.
Those final words lingered, and then suddenly it was sunrise and the woman was gone. Terry had his leg x-rayed again. The implants had vanished, leaving only two tiny wires where the devices had once been. The petal-shaped implants and microchip were gone. No incision, no scar. For 40 years, Terry unknowingly carried proof of his abduction. Just as he prepared to share this truth, the evidence vanished. Many people have found strange implants in their bodies, triggering very unpleasant memories. So think twice before getting that x-ray. Alien abductions don't scar the body, but they scar the mind. Most abductees are completely unaware of their experiences. And if you ask Terry Lovelace, he'd say they're the lucky ones. Terry Lovelace's story about an alien artifact backed by x-rays is hard to ignore. Since 2012, he's been sharing his experience in interviews, public talks, and two books.
There's always a book.
His story has remained mostly consistent over the years. Skeptics point out that new details emerged in later interviews, but Terry claims these are new memories resurfacing. What makes Terry's account intriguing is his ordinary life. He's a family man, an accomplished professional. Plus, he wasn't alone at Devil's Den. His friend Toby was there too. Or was he? It turns out Toby isn't his real name. Terry created the pseudonym to protect his friend's privacy. The real Toby died in 2007, so now this story is Terry's and Terry's alone. Then there's the X-ray of Terry's leg. Some say the implant is just a radio-opaque object on his skin, not inside. The wires and microchip aren't visible from a side view, which means they're probably outside his body, not implanted. Maybe. Probably. Most so-called alien artifacts can be explained. When foreign objects like splinters get embedded in the skin, the body forms a membrane around them to prevent infection. This even happened to Whitley Strieber, a well-known abductee. One of his alien implants turned out to be nothing but cartilage. Does that mean that people are lying? Well, not necessarily. Many experience hypnagogic hallucinations, those vivid in-between states of dreaming and waking that can feel disturbingly real. This explains most abduction stories, but not all of them. If I can't debunk a story, I choose to believe it, but you decide for yourself. But we can all agree on one thing. The government is hiding something, proof that we're not alone. Terry's been asked many times, when will the government disclose the truth? His answer is simple, never. He, like many others, believes the U.S. government struck a deal with extraterrestrials in the late 1940s. In exchange for advanced technology, the aliens are allowed to abduct and even torture American citizens. Remember the Brookings report from NASA in 1961? It warned that discovering extraterrestrial life should be kept secret. Letting the public know could spark mass hysteria, challenge religious beliefs, and threaten government authority. It's that last one that scares them. Imagine we found out aliens exist and that our government not only knows, but allows abductions and torture. It wouldn't just cause hysteria, it would cause a revolution. That's why I'm skeptical when intelligence whistleblowers like Richard Doty, David Grush, Christopher Mellon, or Luis Elizondo come forward. I want to believe them, but without concrete evidence, I don't trust them.
If the Pentagon approves your statements, you're not a whistleblower, you're a spokesman.
Right. That's what I'm afraid of. Everything these men say is cleared by the Pentagon. That's not whistleblowing, that's public relations. So stay skeptical. But someone like Terry Lovelace, he had everything to lose and still chose to speak out. It's okay to be skeptical of his story. I am, but I don't mock it. As more people speak out, the truth becomes harder to hide. UFO disclosure has always been a house of cards, but the cards were a mystery until very recently. Thanks to whistleblowers, each card has a name. The Pentagon, CIA, NSA, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, General Dynamics, Northrop Grumman, Boeing, and others.
AKA the usual suspects.
These are powerful players, but their house of cards is fragile. All it takes is one brave president, senator, or congressman willing to risk everything to bring it crashing down and reveal the truth to the world.
Yeah, is there such thing as a brave politician?
That's the problem. I don't think there is. We continue to empower those hiding the truth by fighting wars, overthrowing governments, and backing dictators. But what disappoints me most is that we allow the deception to continue because the leaders we elect are cowards. But I'm not surprised. Courageous leaders that threaten the military intelligence apparatus don't last. They're silenced by ridicule, media blackouts, threats, or worse. When the next brave politician emerges, they'll face attacks from all sides. It's up to us to protect them, to stand by them and support them.
If you're going to stand by a brave politician, you better wear Kevlar.
I wish that weren't the case, but it is. It makes me so sad. But America is a country built on lies and secrecy, led by cowards who serve the military intelligence state, not the people. And we can change the system, but we have to do it together. Those in power want us divided and distracted, fighting amongst ourselves. But our enemies aren't our neighbors with different political views. Our enemies aren't nations with different ideologies. Our enemies are here. We know who they are. And we need to hold them accountable. But to do that, we must unite. We must set aside our differences and rally around the one and only issue that truly matters. The truth. Thank you so much for hanging out today. My name is AJ. That's Hecklefish.
Blorpist and chill.
I don't know if that one's going to stick, pal. This has been The Y-Files. If you had fun or learned anything, do him a favor, like, subscribe, comment, share. That stuff really helps us out. And like most topics we cover on the channel, today's was recommended by you. So if there's a story you'd like to see or learn more about, go to theyfiles.com/tips. Remember, The Y-Files is also a podcast. Twice a week, I post deep dives into the stories we cover here on the channel, and I also post episodes that wouldn't be allowed on the channel. Those are labeled unredacted. The podcast is called The Y-Files Operation Podcast, and it's available everywhere. Now, in between episodes, you might need more Y-Files in your life. Some people need less, but if you need more, check out our Discord server. We have over 61, 62,000 members, so 24/7, there's somebody on there talking about the same weird stuff that we do here. It's a great community, it's really supportive, it's a lot of fun, and it's free to join. If you want to know what's going on with The Y-Files at any given time, you can check out our production calendar. It's at theyfiles.com/cal. There we post our episode schedule, upcoming podcasts, live streams, meetups, everything. Special thanks to our patrons who made this episode happen. You make the entire channel happen. You've changed my life, and I appreciate you more than you can know. So thank you for your support, and most of all, thank you for your trust. And if you'd like to support the channel and join this amazing community, consider becoming a member on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you have access to perks like videos early with no commercials, access to merch only available to members, plus 2 live streams every week just for you. And I think that's the best perk there is. My camera's on, you get to meet everybody behind the scenes, you put your camera on, come up on stage, ask a question, make fun of the way I look, whatever you want. It's a lot of fun, I think it's the best perk. Another great way to support the channel is grab something from the Y-Files store.
Grab a heck of a t-shirt or a coffee mug with my face on it. It's a perfectly fistable mug that you can slip your fist in and enjoy a beverage. Or get a hoodie or a shirt or stuff my face on it. As long as my face is on it, we're not going to have any problems, you see? You don't want any problems with me. Or you can get one of these squeezy stuffed animal talking hecklefish toy fishes.
Those are the plugs, and that's going to do it. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and know that you are appreciated.
Oh, 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 yeah. I played Polybius in Area 51. A secret code inside the Bible said I was. I love my UFOs and paranormal fun, as well as music, so I'm singing like I should. But then another conspiracy theory becomes the truth, my friends, and it never ends. No, it never ends. The crap got and got stuck inside Mel's hole with MK Ultra, of being only too aware. Did Stanley Kubrick fake the moon landing alone on a film set, or were the shadow people there? The Roswell aliens just fought the smiling man, I'm told, and his name was Cold. And I can't believe secret city underground. Mysterious number stations, planet Circle 2, Project Stargate, and what the Dark Watchers found. Within a simulation, don't you worry though, the Black Knight satellite, it told me so. I can't believe I'm dancing with the fish. Hecklefish on Thursday nights with AJ2 and the Wild. I'm through the night. Camels love to